Father in heaven, thank you for your blessing. For your blessing we are here, for your blessing we are in the church, and for your blessing we are Christians today. Help us to defend the Bible and the teachings of the Lord Jesus, and be with us in this seminar, in Jesus' name, amen. Okay, let me do an start, and I guess this is a good start in certain sense. I know several of you do not speak Spanish, but that was my original language, and it is. So if you feel an accent, it's not, please don't go to the medical doctor to check with, if you do have a problem. No, it's myself, so don't worry for that. But years ago, when I was in South America, I've been doing pastoral work, and doing pastoral work, I've been called to be an editor. And I've been working as an editor in South America for approximately 10 years. I've been in charge of the equivalency of the Sabbath School Quarterly. And I've been working with Ministry Magazine in Spanish. Ministry Magazine in those days were a kind of joint service between the Inter-American Division and the South American Division. And of course, one of the areas in which I've been dealing during my ministry before going to the Buenos Aires Publishing House and working together with a Brazilian publishing house together with the Ministry Magazine, is to provide to the pastors and to the lay people information regarding a variety of things. For example, doctrines, teaching, theology, and whatever, and also comparative religions. Maybe to my background, comparative religions was something that was very attractive for myself, because it's going to help you to distinguish Baptist from Methodist and Catholics and Christian Science and so on. So with that kind of background, and especially with a person that was a handicapped person in one church, I learned a lot of that handicapped gentleman, because he was a living testimony, a living witness of the Seventh-day Adventist faith wherever he went in those days. And he cannot be able to walk. He was with a small cart, and he pushed the cart with his hands, and he went to the places and gave testimony to Mormons, Catholics, and I learned with him a lot. And I think for myself, look, maybe in the future, I need to do something regarding this kind of ministry, because it's a kind of service. Many people, they don't know about how to be dealing with that, and how be reaching those who are Pentecostals, Catholics, and so on. So I began to think in a book that helped, and I wrote this. Sorry, it's in another language. It's not in English yet, because I'm thinking and put it in English in a future, because a friend of me, when I was in Colombia, and this is the first time in which it was printed out, she's from Trinidad and Tobago, and she said, Daniel, this is not in English. I say, no. Well, you need to put it in the language of heaven. That was the first time I was in touch with a very big theological topic about what language we are going to be speak in heaven. And of course, they were Trinidad and Tobago. They speak English, a British kind of English, but they speak English. And I say to my dear friend, well, probably it's a challenge for the future, and I will try to do it. So I am still in thinking. But in this book, I am dealing with some critical issues regarding the topic of sects. Do you have in English another word for sects? Yes, but
sect.
Yes, sect.
Right. Sect, not sect. You see where their mind is going?
I didn't went too far. So I was arranging a lot of things like Catholicism, and I put it here because there was a theologian from South America that called Catholics a sect. You know, the word sect is coming from sector. It's a portion of the society, and this author is catalogizing and identifying, labeling Catholics like that. And they were the master call for Latin America. To them, in Latin America, we are that. That's interesting. So, in English, I guess, I have to use the word cults. It's a better word, I guess, for... Yes, I learned a lot. You know, I was in Ann Arbor, and one day we were promoting our church, Seventh-day Adventist Church, Spanish, and we put cultos en español. And the pastor approached to me and said, you put that? Yes. That word is... What does it mean, he says, you know, just to approach to the topic, say... means worship. In Spanish, that is the meaning. There is no other word in Spanish when you are going to worship that call worship in Spanish, culto. But culto means it's very close to cults. And cults is sects. So sometimes in the intersection of linguistics tension, you need to be very precise. And that's a problem with myself, Katrina, regarding sex. So, I'm sorry for that. But you're right. And remember something. He's, from this moment on, my lawyer.
I represent you.
By the way, for those who don't know, he is a lawyer. And quite interesting. So, in this, what I am doing, or we're doing in Spanish, is to put something like a big picture, general picture, of some comparisons between the views regarding the understanding of God, the divinity, the understanding of the doctrines, the understanding of the practices, and so on. And that is the general topic of that. And when I finish the book, the first person I went to give the book was my father. Because my father, I was in a tension in my home when I was a kid. But they took me, being from Catholic background in South America, because Scarone is Italian. Please, Italian is the el lado de la familia que me conecta con l'Italia, is the side of the family that connects me with the insult in Europe. And when I was reared as a kid, I was an altar boy. But my father moved into the Christian Science. And for me, it was quite interesting. And I was in one of the worships of them in South America when I heard the Lord's Prayer, that is from Mary Morse Baker Eddy in the book Christian Science. It's and they pray, "Our Father / Mother in Heaven." So the altar boy that was invited was, you know, what they are saying, and it's written. So when you go there, it's quite interesting. So that kind of environment took me to side by side to search into other religions. So I wrote this thinking in the pastoral needs, especially for the mission of the church. And I wrote on Catholicism, Christian Science, the Universal Church of God, that is Moon, and Moon has been, this is Unification Church of God, that is Moon. And Moon was very well represented in my city, to the point in which they call, instead of Montevideo, Moontevideo. Because the invasion of the Moonies were so big that changed the panorama that. And the Universal Church of God is Armstrong. And Armstrong, for me, it was an interesting point, and I wrote in this book something. This book is from 1995. So you see, it's just printed. 22 years, it's incredible, you know. But it's in 1990. Go ahead. In 1990, I mentioned that if they were going to change the leadership, they were going to change doctrines and teaching, and in 5 years that happened with that church. So in Costa Rica, there were somebody that called me prophet for that. But I am not a prophet, just an observer. And I like to do a comparative analysis of the backgrounds of the religious movement. In those days, when I wrote this, and I'm going to change it, my view regarding Islam was very, very innocent, almost angelical, I will say. Today, I don't have that any longer, that view. And I'm going to tell you from the beginning, because I don't want to lose your time for the rest of the week, that I am not very sympathetic with Muslims. And I am not seeing them as a true religion, and I am going to demonstrate during the week, using the Bible and using the spirit of prophecy. And probably you are going to agree with several of the things. But from the starting point, I am going to be very clear regarding these topics. Okay? So let me give you a point here, and this is a test. It's not a very good one, but how much you know about Islam? You know little, something, much? How much you know? How much you want to know? Because in a week it's going to be short the time, but I'm going to give you probably the best information that I can do in this time. And I will try to do that kind of approach. But it's important that you answer also the following question. Is Islam like any other religion, according to your view? It is? No? Yes. Well, there are yeses and noes. We're going to see, and probably very soon, because here in the Sahih al-Bukhari, in Sahih al-Bukhari, Sahih means the right al-Bukhari, and al-Bukhari is one of about 6-7 hadiths. And learn that word, because hadiths is the equivalent of traditions in Islam, in the Muslims, the hadith. And sometimes you think that everything of the authority rests upon the Quran. It's not. It's in the Quran plus hadith. The hadith is like what I will say, tradition in Catholicism, because it's the words, the teachings, expression, local encounters about the Prophet Muhammad, the casual conversations of Muhammad. All that is a hadith. And hadith, it's a very, very big catechism, if you can put a Catholic topic upon that, you know. And it's very important to know about that. Do they believe in conversion and baptism?
No. Conversion, yeah. Not away from it.
The hadith. The hadith is coming from verbal, oral, a tradition that was communicated from one generation to the next. And that is the reason why, and this is from Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. And they put the Sahih al-Bukhari. The Sahih means the correct, because there are distortions, but when they put Sahih, means that is the true one. The truthful one. There is not, you know, a distortion about the Sahih. And the other thing that I was commenting regarding that, do they believe in conversion and baptism? If you say no, well, they believe in conversion. The concept of conversion we are going to explore is more close to submission. The idea of submission is kind of dominant behavior of a relationship of people. And that is the vision of them regarding all other religions either. So it's important to take in account that, and you are going to see in the presentation. Do they accept the Bible?
Yes, but corrupt. People of the book.
It's interesting because when I was exploring Mormonism, I began to stress upon phenomenic kind of relationship in between the Mohammedans and the Mormons. The Muslims or Islam and the Mormons, and there are a lot of things in common. And I was surprised. And I was putting, and probably it's going to be Thursday, the presentation, but when you are going to check things, you are going to see a lot of things. Both believe in a prophet. Both of them do have their own Book of Mormon, Quran, Muhammad, Joseph Smith. So you are going to see a lot of other visions. They do have a health, diet, and ministry. And the others, they do have. Halal is the kosher. But all halal is kosher? Oh, no. Oh, no. Halal is not kosher. And that is important. The meaning of that, it's sometimes very, very important. And we are going to be dealing with that during the week. Are they involved in ecumenism? Are they inviting other religions to unite themselves?
No.
And they accept?
No, not unite. They need to follow up. They want everybody to be like them.
They convert by war.
Yeah. And that is true. Of course, the only ecumenism that they accept is under Islam. It's my way or
my way. Your head.
Yeah. So, are they defenders of liberty of conscience? Well, let me tell you that there is a lot of incarceration of those who were believers of liberty of conscience in those countries. And that is critical. So, oh, yes. Of course. Yes. Think about Salman Rushdie. Salman Rushdie, Canadian, you know? And he, you know the Satanic Verses. He wrote that. And every time that if Salman Rushdie is going to go to the airplane with you, take another airplane. Because he is going to be with so big security that he's going to probably 10, 15 people more than himself. Because there was a fatwa. I'm going to explain the fatwa later. Fatwa means if you kill him, or Saudi Arabia or Iran is going to pay certain amount of money to you. Because fatwa means that man is required in hell, not in other place. And that is, you know, a religious call. That's incredible. But do they believe in religious liberty? Well, it's quite interesting. So we are going to be entertained in the week. What are common elements with them between Seventh-day Adventists and Muslims? In a casual conversation, it is good that you know something. They do not eat pork. And when you see that, let me tell you that it's not because they obey the Bible. Because just the Quran. And they do not eat pork. Seventh-day Muslims believe in creation and reject evolution. That is another interesting point of contact. You know, sometimes we need to build bridges before we can enter into a topic with them. But here is another topic, and we are going to rate it close to the theme, the end of the seminar. They do not drink alcohol. That is interesting also. They do not worship idols. There is not an idolatric vision in the Quran. And when we approach to this topic and to this specific topic, it is interesting that they see us Christians as pagans, because we do believe in the Trinity, and they see that as polytheism, kind of. And in the internet, you are going to find out a lot of places in which they are discussing about this topic. They do not play games. It's also interesting about that. And they believe in resurrection. And believe they are called and to worship God, and they believe in a prophet. So there are some things in which we might be able to touch base with each other. And this is good because sometimes we don't know how to establish a good conversation, I will say, in a plane or whatever. Here there are some elements. And there are topics in which you might be able to give testimony about your faith or so with them. You
play games, does that mean gambling?
Gambling. Yes, not soccer or... recently, international news, there was observance of certain traditions. I don't know how many of you are familiar with soccer, like in South America. But there was a soccer match between Australia and the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. And the Australians, with an empathetic spirit with what happened in London, they made a minute of silence. So all the players of the team joined arms together, and the players of the Saudi Arabia continued. It was shocking for the world, but this is an eye-opening for the world about where they are at heart regarding this kind of situation. Yes?
Do you want to ask questions and go along, or would you rather wait on the question? My question is, are you going to cover any of the history? Because I have heard various theories that of the Islam's brought on because of Cain and Abel, or between Jacob and Esau. Are you going to cover any of the history?
I'm going.
Oh, good.
I'm going. Yes. I'm going to. I guess that this is important, certain sense, because from the missionary standpoint of view, I approach to the topic as a very conservative point of view in mission. You know, the people, and let me tell you something. If you have, we do have here in Michigan, I'm going to say superficial things. I'm not going to enter into details, okay? And I'm going to explain that. There are Muslims converted into the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And I'm not going to say where, in what city, or in what church, and what's the name, or give telephone number or something. So we are not going to give that information, because this is a very interconnected community. Okay? In 2004, I wrote an article in Spanish. The article was entitled Detrás del Velo del Islam. It was 2 years after September 11. Yeah? 3 years almost. And I've been doing a presentation regarding that topic, and the title in English will be Behind the Veil of Islam. Okay? And in that, I mention my new view regarding Islam. Immediately, a center in California, LA, Los Angeles, called Pacific Press Publishing Association and asked them about myself, who I was, what was my function, where do I live, what where I am doing, and so on. That is the kind of community with which you are interrelated with. So when people is coming into the church and they are baptizing a Seventh-day Adventist, please keep that topic down. Do not put that in the memo, Michigan memo, you know. Don't put it in the Lake Herald. Don't put it in Adventist Review. Don't put pictures. Don't put names. Because this recently happened something in one of our cities here. There was a baptism of a Muslim person, and I am going to the generic, you know. I am neutral language in this moment. And this person became a SDA. And immediately the family began to receive pressure from several angles to separate from that person and so on, to the point in which that person has to move into another state and is in another state in this moment. We don't have personnel in functions in the church that were former Muslims. There are people in function, in offices, in our church functions, that, yes. Yes, in the leadership of the lay leaders. In the lay leaders of our church that are former Muslims. And it's important that you know that the message is going on with them. But we need to be very quiet. And I'm going to discuss probably Thursday or Friday, I don't know yet, regarding what are the angles and the perspectives regarding how we are going to be dealing with that. This is a book, by the way, Perspectives. If you have some money to expend, this is a very interesting book, Perspectives in Mission. This is it's evangelical, but this is going to tell you how evangelicals and even ourselves and several other religious movements are going to be dealing with them, because it's very, very complex. You are not going to start a church naked and say we are Seventh-day Adventist church in Egypt or in any other place unless you believe that you are going to be immediately in heaven. Because they are going to help you. It's not one. Probably I'm going to give the editor. It's a kind of religious contribution of missionologists working for several universities in across America, specialists in mission. They study how to reach other religious movements. And this is including Islam, Buddhism, that, by the way, is close to Islam in going to rejection of different versions or vision of religion. Buddhists, they are very aggressive in defending them and in perspectives. I'm going to put bibliography at the end. Yes.
From what I understand, there are actually millions of Seventh-day Adventists in Saudi Arabia and like Afghanistan, but we can't, you know, count them because they have to live publicly as Muslims. They can't come out and say, I'm a Seventh-day Adventist, mm-hmm. because they'd be killed. But that there are actually millions of them in Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. And it's growing. But publicly, they have to go to mosque and they have to, you know, live the life as a Muslim. Otherwise, they would.
That is true. However, I am in a kind of difference with that tendency. Because at some point you need to tell who you are. Yeah, I understand that. And I've been in the seminars of that. But let me tell you that at some point we need to be very clear regarding our identity as believers. And I am not clear because let me share with you and this is just a fresh reaction to the topic. And I know that that I'm not discussing with you regarding that. I am discussing with that position. But we normally come here and we sit here in this way. If of course, that is the form of the worship. That is the form of the worship. There is no problem for me. If you go to Africa, the form of the worship is going to be different. The hymns are going to be different. I am the multi-ethnic director here, and when I enter in Umuhusa means in Kinyarwanda, that is the language of Rwanda, means unity or reconciliation. And, you know, the African way of singing and participating is a bit different from us. But you need to adapt yourself to them, but the content cannot change. The content. Because in certain sense, the content is the message. And you cannot change that. And in certain adaptations for surviving, my perception is that there is a tendency of sacrifice some content due to the forms and to be accepted of. And I am thinking that that is questionable.
We have the same thing over here. A lot of people here believe the Sabbath, but they don't go to church due to family and social pressure.
Well, yeah. It's, yeah, can be that. Can you call them Seventh-day Adventists?
No, they won't come out and be baptized. But that's, they do believe it, you know. Now, I have a question on the, you were saying that the Muslims don't drink alcohol. Do they also drag their feet on smoking?
Well, I didn't mention about smoking. But because smoking is a little bit elastic regarding that. But the majority of them, I would say, the majority of imams that are the religious leaders generally do not smoke. Generally. Okay, let me review with you some of the things that you were saying at the beginning. What we don't have in common with them is that we are dealing with a theocratic movement. Theocratic movement. What is that? Let me share with you. You know, when I was reading the hadith and I was checking the introduction, I come here in the first paragraph says Islam is a heavenly system or regime for all the dwellers of the earth. And it is a mighty treasure if only mankind realizes its authenticity and truth. I repeat, Islam is a heavenly system or regime. I'm going to put it in a moment. So that is the meaning of that. It's a theocracy. That means that for them, Allah is guiding the leaders of the nation, God. So it is all inside religion. Politics, government, everything is inside religion. That is a theocracy. It's not a democracy. So when you say or see names like Republic of this and that, in the bottom line is a theocratic institution inside. So please take in account that. Yeah. In the Old Testament, yes. Yes. So with elements, there are elements from Judaism and Christianity. We are referred by the Quran. We are the people of the book. The Quran calls us, every one of us, no matter what. There is no distinguish. They don't distinguish Catholics, Pentecostals, Seventh-day Adventists. No. all those who believe in the Bible are people of the book, even Jewish. Okay? Yeah. Public regulations come from religion background. So if you are going to go to the city in Riyadh and you go public and you are visiting, you need to dress, ladies, you need to dress like the ladies there. And there is policy for that. The policy is going to tell you what you are going to use, or if not, you are going to jail, by the way. And they are not going to hesitate in doing that. In the majority, will look for a monopoly of power. Okay, let me clarify this. When they reach a place in which in a society they are in a condition of majority, they are going to press for the Sharia. What does it mean? That is the law of Islam as a regulation. And that is very serious. If you want to dig in, I recommend you to read this book. I'm going to give you some bibliographic elements at the end, but this book is Bat Sheor is the author. It's in English. It's a translation from French. This lady is Jewish that was born in Egypt, and that is that book. It is very interesting. This is the lady that used the term that I was illuminated with. Eurabia. She say, if Europe do not change, they are going to be Eurabia very soon. You understand the meaning? Even the Catholic churches are being under the Muslims' power in this moment in Europe. And this lady is calling the attention about the decline of Eastern Christianity under Islam.
They don't have it at the end,
No. No. The ABC for this is Amazon. Please don't say to Tim Castagnon this. The point is that when I was reading this, I was very surprised because that is the point in which New York Times recently, I guess I have this here. Well, I didn't reach about that, but okay. No, it's here. Here's the New York Times. Is this the end of Christianity in the Middle East? What is the point about that? This is on July 22nd, on 2015 in the New York Times, and you are going to read about that because it's a very, very challenging article. Because something that you are going to grasp immediately when you read that kind of documentation is that once Islam established, everything that is under is going to disappear. There is no other way. So think about that. Think about that. Think about what happened with the churches that the Apostle Paul established. They are not any longer there. They do not exist any longer. Christianity in the Middle East completely disappeared. And when you see the map of the churches, Christian churches, all those churches in the Middle East, they disappear. Think about that. Before Muhammad, all those areas were Jewish Christians, the majority, with a lot of, I would say, tendencies inside, and Zoroastrianism that were, in certain sense, a minority in the Middle East, but the majority were Christian and Jewish. Everything is gone. What happened? They made them disappear. Simple. Yes.
If that is the case, why are we not speaking up, and why are we just allowing them to come in and cowering, it seems like, before them, because we don't want to hurt their feelings or
political correctness.
Whatever, yeah, political correctness. I mean, there are numerous Adventists who tell us, don't get excited. God loves them just like, you know, and we should try to win them. But if we can't win them, why do we want to join them?
Well, I'm not a politician. I am a pastor. However, with them, I will say that after thinking and thinking and thinking, it is quite interesting to observe what is the people that they do reject at the most. Think about who are the people that they hate. Choose. I do agree. The question is, why? Because this is the only people that confronted them. In the same level. If you say this to Jay or the others, I'm going to be in trouble, you know. But the reality is that the only people that is surviving in the Middle East as a nation, they were those who confront them and protect themselves. And that is a rationale for that, because they couldn't go forward on that. Look, let me tell you something. For them, the first mosque in the first worship place in the world, where it is? It's Kaaba. It's Kaaba in Mecca. That is Saudi Arabia. Okay? I'm going to enter into that. But what is the second place? Jerusalem. And what they did, they enter, they conquer, they took it. The place in which there was the temple, the Jewish temple, and they put the mosque upon that. And the only thing that was for the Jewish people, that was the Wailing Wall outside. That is the only thing. And that as an external wall of the former sanctuary. So this is telling you that when they enter into a place, they are going to try to dominate by power. There is no question about that. Yes?
Isn't Paul truly behind the whole Muslim movement, behind the curtain?
Well, Bergoglio, Jorge Bergoglio. Jorge Bergoglio is the name of the Pope, the actual Pope. The situation in this moment is very sensitive. And I am going to answer your question or your point of the questioning, because I do have some concerns, and my concerns are here. They do have a history of suppression, genocide, and elimination of historical background. You look what happened when ISIS took power into certain places that were former Christians on other religions. They made them disappear. No archaeological sites any longer. Why? Because they were going to make disappear the background. Yes.
I don't understand your point of view, because what about the Catholic power during all the Crusades? I mean, there was definitely conflict between them and Islam. The Crusades murdered many Islam.
But the Crusades were called for after 400 years of Muslim aggression against Christianity.
Pardon me? I couldn't hear you.
The Crusades were a response to 400 years of Muslim aggression against Christian pilgrims in the Holy Land. People saying, oh, those big bad Christians, they slaughtered the Muslims. The Pope Urban called for the First Crusade after being begged for help from Eastern Empire, because they were being invaded by Muslims. And Christian pilgrims were being slaughtered in the caravans by Muslims. The Christians begged for assistance from the Pope because of 400 years of Muslim aggression. It wasn't just because Christians went, well, we're going to go over there and we're going to attack those peaceful Muslims.
I'm going to enter into that in a few moments. But don't worry, let me tell you something. I'm not a monopolist in positions. So I am open to difference of view. Let me tell you. But regarding my point of view, is this. I am concerned because they are expanding into the Western countries. And if nothing happens, what is going to be with Europe, Western society, I mean North America, Central America, and South America, Australia and others, are going to suffer with the same thing with the Middle East. Because the expansion is very clear. And you are going to see that in other places. Let me share with you a couple of things, and I'm going to give you that as a background of this. They are penetrating Europe. So this author called Europe Eurabia, because it's changing. And the Pope is in a very difficult position. Let me share with you quickly regarding the Pope. The Pope is a Peronist. A Peronist. He is a follower or with a vision of Juan Domingo Perón. He is an Argentinian and very socialist in the heart, you know. And look, let me share with you this.
We have some differences of opinion because I don't see it that way.
Oh yeah. No, don't worry for that. But I'm going to tell where is my position. About 20 years ago, there was an explosion in Buenos Aires. There were two things that exploded. One was the embassy of Israel in Buenos Aires. And second was the building of the AMIA in Buenos Aires. Approximately in total, there were 100-something people died. In the second only, about 80. And I never heard the Pope rejecting that. Never.
I agree with that.
Well, I like that you agree something with me. just kidding. Yeah, I understand.
I've seen that the Pope
is of a different power, because I'm looking at it from the point of people that are running the world. And
yeah, but Argentina was in the government power, aligning with certain tendencies in Latin America. I guess several of you are familiar with the word or the expression left wing. Okay? Left wing. Left wing is changing in Latin America. It's not any longer communism. Communism is gone. But who is fighting against imperialism of USA in Latin America? Who? So, well, socialism is in aligning with those who are in confrontation. Why is the reason that Maduro in Venezuela put as a vice president a Muslim background guy, Al-Hawihi, giving passports and making them enter into Venezuela to enter in USA with or under a Venezuelan passport? I guess you understand, and probably isn't the second point in which you do agree together. Yeah, but in Argentina, in the country of Bergoglio, those who work with the labor unions, and you are familiar with that, labor unions, one of the leaders was with a picture like this, but it was a picture here, and he was taken from the right. The picture was in this side, but the picture, the effect is like this. And in the picture, who was the person that was not Bergoglio? Was Ayatollah Khomeini. What is telling you? That union laborers are in line, in togetherness with those who are fighting against USA. And that is the tendency going into Latin America. Believe me. Oh, good. Good. So this is penetration in the Middle East, penetration in Europe, penetration in Latin America, and penetration in USA. Hey, look, when I visited my daughter years ago, she used to be living in Houston. So I took from Lansing, and I took the 96, 75. When you cross 75 and you cross 80, 90, there is a very big mosque over there. Not a little. There are not 50 guys going, you know, every Friday there. No. It's a big, big monster mosque. And when I reach Houston, you know, if you know Houston, you are going to be familiar with this word, Westheimer. It's like the 4th Avenue in New York, you know, or 5th Avenue in New York. If you are in New York, do not visit 5th Avenue, you know, it's downtown, okay? When you cross Westheimer, at the end of Westheimer, another big, big mosque. Go to Detroit, not far away from here, and when you reach Dearborn, near Detroit, there is a big mosque. More than that, 300,000 people over there. So this is challenging. So there is a very clear penetration in the society. So we need to know several things. We need to know how they were working outside us. We need to know how they were working in Europe. We need to know how they were working in the Middle East. Because they are knocking the doors. they are approaching. And we need to know how to deal with them and to know how to work in the best Christian way possible. Please, I'm not pro-violent. I'm not pro-violent, no. I'm not, but I'm not a stupid. And I try to defend myself in the case that something happened, but these people is a menace in general for Christianity, and that is a truth. Yes.
For the know, this is humongously big mosque when you go northeast from Toronto, and there are smaller ones all around the place.
Yes. So, yes. Canada. Yes.
Not only here.
Yeah. It's in Canada too. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
All over the place.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm.
Toledo, Ohio. 24.
Oh yes. It is. Yeah.
We know in the future that we're going to be imprisoned, persecuted, even put to death because of our beliefs. And as we are trying to understand Islam more, I'm wondering if we end up on our USA intelligence list of people that the government is going to be, checking into us more. Sometimes I think that ignorance is bliss,
is true. Oh, yes. Hey, following this comment, everything changed when you are going to take a flight. Hey, 2011 changed everything.
Yes.
If you are going to take a flight now, you are going to check everything, and this is due to what? Yes.
Do you know why they picked the date September 11th?
Why?
September 11th wasn't just a random date that they pulled out of their hand.
911?
No, I mean why they chose September 11th.
I don't remember.
No. September 11th, 1683.
What happened?
It was the Battle of Vienna when on that day they...
They lost.
They lost. It was a huge battle and Islam lost and they were pushed back across, well, closer to their own borders and their spread across Europe was halted. So that date, September 11th, for Muslims is a day of infamy, and it's an embarrassment to them. So they picked the date, September 11th, for a very specific reason.
This is the day of Carlos Martel in Europe.
September 11th.
Hmm, interesting. No, Martel is later.
Martel was in France.
But Martel is in France.
September 11th, 1683.
The church.
Oh, with the Turks, okay.
They were pushing across Eastern Europe, and they literally were camped outside the gates of Vienna, and the Christian defenders inside at night time went out the back side of the gate and came around them and attacked them at night, and it was such a huge defeat for the Muslims. Their push across Europe was halted, and then they were slowly pushed back.
Well, they are inventing another push now.
No, but their push across Europe was helpful, so it's such an embarrassing defeat for them that that date forever is for them is an embarrassment. So they have to try to make amends for that defeat on that date. So they chose the date September 11th for a very specific reason.
Yeah, thank you for that. I guess that we are seeing another way in which they are overwhelmingly be in Europe now. And this is the case of refugees. And they couldn't with one way, and they are doing in this way. Here, this is something I already mentioned. Islam is a heavenly system or regime for all the dwellers of the earth. And it is a mighty treasure if only mankind realizes its authenticity and truth. Remember those words. Heavenly system means a theocracy. That's the point. Yeah.
I just wanted to say, I'm watching a series of movies. I'm about 50 movies into them, but it's on the whole. It's about the history of Islam. Anyway. You're dealing with basically a system of religion that believes in force, obviously. They're trying to force their views upon others. And we as Christians I don't think we can look at that. We have to trust Christ in our lives. And we can't all bear up arms against Islam. I mean, that's not the Christian way. That's not Christ's way. And the idea that they're going to be taking over, I don't know that. I mean, what can you do about it? And you can't bear arms and begin killing them if they come around your home. Can you, as Christians? Is that the right thing to do?
Yeah. Well, this is not a mission. This is not. I am not in favor of a crusade. But I guess that there are several other options that we need to work with, and one is religious liberty, and the way in which we work with them here, they need to work with us there. And that is very important. I don't know if that is going to function, but hey, why they are here enjoying our liberties and we cannot enjoy our liberties there? That is a kind of international relationship that we need to be working for. And for me, religious liberty is expressing your point of view clear and openly. Because what we were trying to show today is history. And it's very clear that happened. And if we do not take any kind of position in the future, we might be at risk. And that is my point of view regarding that. Let me finish here today with something that is important. This is from Washington Post, February 25th. 2002, says, then they file into their Islamic studies class where the textbooks tell them the day of judgment can't come until Jesus Christ returns the earth. By the way, we believe that. But look about that. Breaks the cross and converts everyone to Islam and until Muslims start attacking Jews. And I guess this is a soft version for when it says attacking Jews. Because it's probably a little bit more than that. And, you know, this is public information. Because you can get that in the Washington Post. But the truth is that Muslims' day schools, for example, are financed by the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Until today, in fact, many such schools are not considered by Muslims to be truly Islamic because there is not yet a curriculum that teaches all subjects through the Islamic prism. Nor is there an Americanized curriculum for Islamic studies, say Hamed El Ghazali, head of the Muslims American Society Council on Islamic Schools. And this is the point in which I need to give you a picture, final picture today, regarding the point of time of Islam. Islam do not appear in history before Judaism. It doesn't appear in history before Christianity. Appears much later, 6 centuries after Christ. So here is the time of the Exodus, Book of Daniel, Jesus, the Apostle Paul, and that is Muhammad. So you are going to find elements in the Muslim religions and in the Quran with elements coming from Judaism and from Christianity. In the Bible, you are going to check several elements that are very interesting. For example, name of books and chapters and verses. The Quran is almost the same structure. It's almost the same structure with one name that is going to change everything, that is Shura. It's the name of the chapters. But there are verses and juras. And when you are going to find a precise position, you are going to check for the shura and the verse, and it's there. It's there. And there are very interesting interesting topics. There are connections with Jesus. There are connections with Moses. Moses is quote. Abraham is quote. Prophets of the Old Testament. Almost all of them are quote in the Quran. The vision of Jesus is going to be a little bit different, but Jesus is quoted in the Quran. And Mary is mentioned in the Quran. And probably you are going to survey the Quran with certain kind of interest to see certain things. Tomorrow I will try to give you a hint of the sources of the Quran. We are going to be in analyzing and viewing some kind of elements before entering into a kind of similarities and differences between the Quran and the Bible. And I'm going to mention, and we are going to put verses side by side and situations and quotations. Yes. Yes. It is almost impossible, my dear and knowledgeable person, lady, to be dealing with the doctrines without the vision of the abrogation. Because that shura with the abrogation that she is referring is a key element in the interpretation of the things. Because the abrogation is one of the final shuras given to Gabriel, to Muhammad, and we are going to be speaking about that, that abrogates everything that is before, something that you are not going to see in any other religious movement like that. Yes, but it's important that we know as a Christians about that. So let's have a word of prayer, and we are going to finish today, and tomorrow at the same time we are going to be starting.
This media was brought to you by Audioverse, a website dedicated to spreading God's Word through free sermon audio and much more. If you would like to know more about Audioverse, or if you would like to listen to more sermons, please visit www.audioverse.org.